oak meant is not known, but there can be no doubt that it was a cave of the Ice Age containing animal pictures. All this goes to prove that the caves and rocks with the animal paintings have always been instinctively felt to be what they originally were, religious places. The gnomon of the place has outlived the centuries. In a number of caves, the modern visitor must travel through low, dark, and damp passages till he reaches the point where the great painted chambers suddenly open out. This arduous approach may express the desire of the primitive men to safeguard from common sight all that was contained and went on in the caves, and to protect their mystery. The sudden and unexpected sight of the paintings in the chambers, coming after the difficult and awe-inspiring approach, must have made an overwhelming impression on primitive man. The Paleolithic cave paintings consist almost entirely of figures of animals, whose movements and postures have been observed in nature and are rendered with great artistic skill. There are, however, many details that show that the figures were intended to be something more than naturalistic reproductions. Kuhn writes, "The strange thing is that a good many primitive paintings have been used as targets. At Montespan, there is an engraving of a horse that is being driven into a trap. It is pitted with the marks of missiles. A clay model of a bear in the same cave has 42 holes. These pictures suggest a hunting magic like that still practiced today by hunting tribes in Africa. The painted animal has the function of a double. By its symbolic slaughter, the hunters attempt to anticipate and ensure the death of the real animal. This is a form of sympathetic magic, which is based on the reality of a double represented in a picture. What happens to the picture will happen to the original. The underlying psychological fact is a strong identification between a living being and its image, which is considered to be the being's soul. This is one reason why a great many primitive people today will shrink from being photographed. Other cave pictures must have served magic fertility rites. They show animals at the moment of mating. An example can be seen in the figures of a male and female bison in the Tuc de Dubert cave in France. Thus, the realistic picture of the animals was enriched by overtones of magic and took on a symbolic significance. It became the image of the living essence of the animal. The most interesting figures in the cave paintings are those of semi-human beings in animal disguise, which are sometimes to be found besides the animals. In the Trois Frères cave in France, a man wrapped in an animal hide is playing a primitive flute as if he meant to put a spell on the animals. In the same cave, there is a dancing human being with antlers, a horse's head, and bear's paws. This figure, dominating a medley of several hundred animals, is unquestionably the lord of the animals. The customs and usages of some primitive African tribes today can throw some light on the meaning of these mysterious and doubtless symbolic figures. In initiations, secret societies, and even the institution of monarchy in these tribes, animals and animal disguises often play an important part. The king and chief are animals too, generally lions or leopards. Vestiges of this custom may be discerned in the title of the last emperor of Ethiopia, Haile Selassie, Lion of Judah, or the honorific name of Dr. Hastings Banda, the Lion of Malawi. The further back we go in time, or the more primitive and close to nature the society is, the more literally such titles must be taken. A primitive chief is not only disguised as the animal. When he appears at initiation rites in full animal disguise, he is the animal. Still more, he is an animal spirit, a terrifying demon who performs circumcision. At such moments, he incorporates or represents the ancestor of the tribe and the clan, and therefore the primal god himself. He represents and is the totem animal. Thus we probably should not go far wrong in seeing in the figure of the dancing animal man in the Trois Frères cave a kind of chief who has been transformed by his disguise into an animal demon. In the course of time, the complete animal disguise was superseded in many places by animal and demon masks. Primitive men lavished all their artistic skill on these masks, and many of them are still unsurpassed in the power and intensity of their expression. They are often the objects of the same veneration as the god or demon himself. Animal masks play a part in the folk arts of many modern countries, like Switzerland, or in the magnificently expressive masks of the ancient Japanese no drama, which is still performed in modern Japan. The symbolic function of the mask is the same as that of the original animal disguise. Individual human expression is submerged, but in its place the wearer assumes the dignity and the beauty, and also the horrifying expression, of an animal demon. In psychological terms, the mask transforms its wearer into an archetypal image. Dancing, which was originally nothing more than a completion of the animal disguise by appropriate movements and gestures, was probably supplementary to the initiation or other rites. It was, so to speak, performed by demons in honor of a demon. In the soft clay of the Tuc de Dubert cave, Herbert Kuhn found footprints that led around animal figures. They show that dancing was part of even the Ice Age rites. Only heel prints can be seen, Kuhn writes. The dancers had moved like bisons. They had danced a bison dance for the fertility and increase of the animals and for their slaughter. In his introductory chapter, Dr. Jung has pointed out the close relation or even identification between the native and his totem animal or bush soul. There are special ceremonies for the establishment of this relationship, especially the initiation rites for boys. The boy enters into possession of his animal soul and at the same time sacrifices his own animal being by circumcision. This dual process admits him to the totem clan and establishes his relationship to his totem animal. Above all, he becomes a man and, in a still wider sense, a human being. East Coast Africans described the uncircumcised as animals. They had neither received an animal soul nor sacrificed their animality. In other words, since neither the human nor the animal aspect of an uncircumcised boy's soul had become conscious, his animal aspect was regarded as dominant. The animal motif is usually symbolic of man's primitive and instinctual nature. Even civilized men must realize the violence of their instinctual drives and their powerlessness in face of the autonomous emotions erupting from the unconscious. This is still more the case with primitive men, whose consciousness is not highly developed and who are still less well equipped to weather the emotional storm. In the first chapter of this book, when Dr. Jung is discussing the ways in which man developed the power of reflection, he takes an example of an African who fell into a rage and killed his beloved little son. When the man recovered himself, he was overwhelmed with grief and remorse for what he had done. In this case, a negative impulse broke loose and did its deadly work regardless of the conscious will. The animal demon is a highly expressive symbol for such an impulse. The vividness and concreteness of the image enables man to establish a relationship with it as a representative of the overwhelming power in himself. He fears it and seeks to propitiate it by sacrifice and ritual. A large number of myths are concerned with a primal animal, which must be sacrificed in the cause of fertility or even creation. One example of this is the sacrifice of a bull by the Persian sun god Mithras, from which sprang the earth with all wealth and fruitfulness. In the Christian legend of St. George slaying the dragon, the primeval rite of sacrificial slaughter again appears. In the religions and religious art of practically every race, animal attributes are ascribed to the supreme gods, or the gods are represented as animals. The ancient Babylonians translated their gods into the heavens in the shape of the ram, the bull, the crab, the lion, the scorpion, the fish, and so on, the signs of the zodiac. The Egyptians represented the goddess Hathor as cow-headed, the god Amun as ram-headed, and Thoth as ibis-headed, or in the shape of a baboon. Ganesha, the Hindu god of good fortune, has a human body but the head of an elephant. Vishnu is a boar. Hanuman is an ape god, etc. The Hindus, incidentally, do not assign the first place in the hierarchy of being to man. The elephant and lion stand higher. Greek mythology is full of animal symbolism. Zeus, the father of the gods, often approaches a girl whom he desires in the shape of a swan, a bull, or an eagle. In Germanic mythology, the cat is sacred to the goddess Freya, while the boar, the raven, and the horse are sacred to Wotan. Even in Christianity, animal symbolism plays a surprisingly great part. Three of the evangelists have animal emblems. St. Luke has the ox, St. Mark the lion, and St. John the eagle. Only one, St. Matthew, is represented as a man or as an angel. Christ himself symbolically appears as the Lamb of God, or the fish, but he is also the serpent exalted on the cross, the lion, and in rarer cases, the unicorn. These animal attributes of Christ indicate that even the Son of God, the supreme personification of man, can no more dispense with his animal nature than with his higher spiritual nature. The subhuman as well as the superhuman is felt to belong to the realm of the divine. The relationship of these two aspects of man is beautifully symbolized in the Christmas picture of the birth of Christ in a stable among animals. The boundless profusion of animal symbolism in the religion and art of all times does not merely emphasize the importance of the symbol. It shows how vital it is for men to integrate into their lives the symbol's psychic content, instinct. In itself, an animal is neither good nor evil. It is a piece of nature. It cannot desire anything that is not in its nature. To put this another way, it obeys its instincts. These instincts often seem mysterious to us, but they have their parallel in human life. The foundation of human nature is instinct. But in man, the animal being, which lives in him as his instinctual psyche, may become dangerous if it is not recognized and integrated in life. Man is the only creature with the power to control instinct by his own will, but he is also able to suppress, distort, and wound it. And an animal, to speak metaphorically, is never so wild and dangerous as when it is wounded. Suppressed instincts can gain control of a man. They can even destroy him. The familiar dream in which the dreamer is pursued by an animal nearly always indicates that an instinct has been split off from consciousness and ought to be, or is trying to be, readmitted and integrated into life. The more dangerous the behavior of the animal in the dream, the more unconscious is the primitive and instinctual soul of the dreamer, and the more imperative is its integration into his life if some irreparable evil is to be forestalled. Suppressed and wounded instincts are the dangers threatening civilized man. Uninhibited drives are the dangers threatening primitive man. In both cases, the animal is alienated from its true nature, and for both, the acceptance of the animal soul is the condition for wholeness and a fully lived life. Primitive man must tame the animal in himself and make it his helpful companion. Civilized man must heal the animal in himself and make it his friend. Other contributors to this book have discussed the importance of the stone and animal motifs in terms of dream and myth. I have used them here only as general examples of the appearance of such living symbols throughout the history of art, and especially religious art. Let us now examine in the same way a most powerful and universal symbol, the circle. The symbol of the circle. Dr. M. L. von Franz has explained the circle or sphere as a symbol of the self. It expresses the totality of the psyche in all its aspects, including the relationship between man and the whole of nature. Whether the symbol of the circle appears in primitive sun worship or modern religion, in myths or dreams, in the mandalas drawn by Tibetan monks, in the ground plans of cities, or in the spherical concepts of early astronomers, it always points to the single most vital aspect of life, its ultimate wholeness. End of side 7. To continue, turn the cassette over.